Hi, I'm Sean Healy, and you're listening to Tools. Hi, everyone. Sean Healy, personal change agent here, and you're listening to episode 55. Of Sean Healy Tools, a podcast designed to support entrepreneurial couples, people in business partnership, and anyone looking for more tips, tools, and strategies to add to the quality of your life. So welcome to today's episode entitled, episode 55, that is, entitled Red Flags for Possible Narcs and Abusers. How do we begin to spot people who potentially are looking to take advantage of us and create lopsided relational dynamics, be that in the workforce or in our personal lives. I don't know about any of you, but I've certainly had experiences both in the dating arena and in the professional arena where relationships with narcissists, fairly extreme ones. It is a spectrum. We've talked about that before, but I certainly have had my experience of fairly extreme narcissists in my life, and that has been very, very challenging. As far as I can tell, I don't think that I've come across a social psychopath, but that could have been possible. I just may not have had the references at the time to recognize them, but we'll talk a little bit about what we know about those kinds of things too. How do we begin to spot people who are potentially abusive in social dynamics? Because this can be challenging in the sense that a lot of abuse tends to be underground. People who are verbal abusers tend to be able to put on a very good public show and then speak very viciously and terribly to those that are closest to them. Narcs and social psychopaths also, by their very nature, know how to put on a good show, know how to really draw you in. And once you're hooked or of no longer of any use to them, then they start with a fairly severe devaluation process. Again, you know, what we start to pay attention to, and not always, it's just something to pay attention to, is extremes in behavioral dynamics. Often with social psychopaths and extreme narcissists, there's a phase of idealization. As you are, let's say in terms of narcissists, they've flagged you as a possible good source of narcissistic supply. Maybe you are somebody who they can attach to in their personal life, or you're somebody that they deem to have power and status in economic settings. And so for whatever reason, you've been chosen. And the thing about narcissists is, because their world is so fragile and so externally focused, they have developed the skills often that really, there's nothing like a narcissist who's on fire. They can be so charming, so charismatic, so clever, so dynamic. But of course, unfortunately, all these things don't last, or they only last while they perceive you to be of some form of use to them, and then you can find yourself very rapidly on the other side of things, which is the devaluation, the attacking, the shaming, the belittling, the punishing and withdrawing side. So there can be this real polarity of experience where suddenly we're up, we're having these amazing experiences with these people, and then the next thing we're left trembling in the cold. But a key element often with these dynamics is first getting your buy-in. They've got very good strategies for getting you hooked in. And so it's beginning to kind of look for what are the things that we're looking for that might just be elements where we go, I might just take another look at this person. Narcissists in particular, especially, you know, those that are quite extreme on the spectrum, one of the things you generally track for is their sense of entitlement. There's this, because of this sense of superiority that they often carry, they are likely to just assume that they're entitled to preferential treatment. So watch the way they go about their day-to-day. You know, if they're dealing with business people, they'll always want to deal directly with the owner. They'll feel entitled to that, or the senior manager. They're very driven by status. If they're working on a project, it's the most amazing thing since sliced bread. You know, you can often track this sense of grandiosity where they're talking themselves up. They can almost look a bit bored if the conversation is off them too long, and they're looking for ways to, again, sell, pump themselves up. They're perfectly okay if you want to validate them and, you know, talk them up. That's perfectly okay. But this sense of entitlement, this sense of grandiosity that goes with them, sometimes they've got that kind of condescending look on the face, that sense of smugness that you can often see, or this kind of, you know, they can be very good at presenting themselves as someone who's this, you know, deep well and font of knowing. You know, they drop in fancy psychological terms or fancy business-based terms to show you that they really know what they're talking about. This positioning themselves in this one-up kind of arrangement where they're looking to and carry this kind of air of superiority. If they're a somatic kind of narcissist and they use their body to get attention, then, you know, they can dress provocatively, or, you know, they're very angular in the way they move their body. They're moving and using their body very calculatedly to draw in attention. If they're a cerebral narcissist, these, you know, tend to be incredibly intellectually sharp. They can be quite eviscerating and belittling to you if you don't share their same opinion. So we're looking at things where somebody seems to consistently be looking to be the center of attention, to be looking to present themselves as somebody special. These are elements that give you, and like I said, that sense of entitlement. These, in my mind, often warrant closer attention, because, you know, we can all go through phases where we can, you know, get a little bit grandiose, get a little bit of our head of ourselves, but we're looking for people who seem to do that consistently and habitually, and most conversations with them end up with them doing most of the talking and you doing most of the listening. And everything seems to be orchestrated on their own terms. They can be very overt in that or very covert in that. The covert narcissists are the ones who kind of maneuver things in the background, but if you look at it, everything seems to be done, ends up being done on their terms. Whereas obviously the overt ones are far more direct. You know, that's the thing about the overt narcissists, is they're a lot easier to spot than the covert ones. The covert ones sometimes take time. And again, you know, with the covert, I'm holding the back of your shirt and pulling you backwards while I'm telling you that I am the one who's helping you to run forward as fast as possible. You know, there's this element of sort of gaslighting that looks like I'm helping. And like I said, the problem is they can be very good at what they do. They can be very good in professional settings. It generally tends to fall flat at some stage because there's a desire for a lot of accolades and a lot of validation and power and affirmation, but they tend to go missing when accountability is on the line, or they're very quick to blame others. The other thing that you can sometimes track for is in their style of humor. They can be very, part of the charisma is they can be very quick and very witty, but they'll normally, it's very rare that you'll see them use self-effacing humor. They won't put themselves down often, but they can be very good at putting other people down, or making fun of others, as again, one of those ways in which, you know, these little gentle ways that they're very good at shame shedding, which is, you know, they're not unable to contain any of their own shame, so they're going to push it out on others. And like I said, there's this generalized, you know, and that humor is about putting others down while, you know, unconsciously positioning they're putting the person through humor in the one down position while they assume the one up, because again, this is about large amounts of superiority. The social psychopath, a little bit different. They might not be so pronoun heavy. I did this. I'm amazing at that. I'm at the forefront of this, the way the kind of the narcissist does it. The social psychopath learns, you know, because there's this lack of empathy and a deficiency in certain emotional elements, and also often a disproportionate orchestration in their brain of reward versus punishment. So these people can be stunningly astute at studying us and learning our vulnerabilities, and progressively, you know, they show up like the dream person. They're almost too good to be true. They look like they're our absolute mirror when they're in their seduction idealization phase. They've got, you know, a lot of the same interests as us. They've got a lot of the same beliefs as us. And funnily enough, they've got the same vulnerabilities as us, and they can hook us in through those elements. So they create this idealized sense. And you can often sometimes track social psychopaths through a work-based system, that they'll be drawn to environments that are hierarchical, and the information channels tend to be very narrow up and down, so that they can control the flow of information. They're going to be positioning themselves where they can control the way they are seen. And because there's that fear of constantly being found out, they always keep a slight distance. And again, both types, my understanding to date is that people extremely on the social psychopath spectrum always tend to have an element of narcissism in them, but not all extreme narcissists are also social psychopaths. Can't remember where I saw that piece of research, but it's again, you know, when we're looking for clusters of behaviors, clusters of red flags, and that's important too. We're not just picking out one distinction that we witnessed once and then going, this person must be a narcissist. That's a very inaccurate and, you know, detrimental kind of element. We're looking to build up a series of examples and references, and we're kind of testing them over time. Sometimes one of the ways we find out is when things go wrong. Because they can, you know, when they decide that we've behaved in a way that doesn't suit them, and they go into, because they've got a very rigid sense of how things should be, and they're very dependent on a certain kind of supply of energy and attention, then we're going to be punished in varying ways, maybe attacked, maybe they'll withdraw from us, maybe they will attack our reputation and triangulate through others. We're also looking at the way in which they approach things when they don't go well, also very much can give you a kind of a clue as to how they will be. The other thing that's worth mentioning here, I'll probably put this in other episodes, but people with extreme what we call control connection issues or narcissistic issues, they are connected to other people in kind of what Patricia Evans, a preeminent expert on these sort of areas, talks about as a backwards connection. People with healthy connection to other people, when you show your individuality, that makes me feel closer to you. When I do something kind for you, I feel close to you. If I'm inadvertently abusive or belittling or upset you, or try to overly control you, that's going to make me feel distant from you, and I'm going to, you know, make amends for that. But people with strong control-based connections, if you start to show individuality, that actually triggers their abandonment. For the narcissist, if you start to behave in ways that don't fit their fantastical requirements and their sense of grandiosity, then again, you are triggering their abandonment. So the way that people like this stay in a sense of closeness is through abusive behavior, and is through controlling everything that we do. That actually makes them feel more connected, not less. So this is where sometimes empaths get themselves into trouble because they think, I just have to love this person enough. Actually, it's kind of the equivalent of throwing petrol on a fire. You're actually doing a great disservice to this person because all you're endorsing is, and you're giving them, you know, I'm feeding off you, that's my narcissistic supply, and your solution to that is just to amplify that supply and give me more. I'm sorry, why on earth would I change my behaviors if that's the case? You know, these are people with deep psychological wounding and a complex set of areas. And, you know, we need to be leaving the treatment of these people to very specialized experts, because the problem is that if I'm an expert at orchestrating my external environment to give me a certain set of addictive hits, if you like, the narcissistic supply, or, you know, the certain validation, or I'm used to and get joy out of, you know, operating people like puppets and breaking them just for the mere amusement of it, because my the empathic elements of my brain are not developed enough. This requires, you know, very complex and very professional approaches from people who really understand, because often these people are very adept at working therapists, at working coaches, at working consultants. Why? Because they specialize in creating a certain image and then how to kind of control and protect that image, and will go to behavioral lengths that the rest of us won't in order to keep that up. It's tougher when we're talking about, you know, dealing with these dynamics in terms of being raised in family systems and the consequences of that. And I've done episodes before, but again, if we're looking for certain behaviors and early in the piece, this, you know, begins to possibly explain or make us move with wariness. Because, you know, again, with people with control connections or, you know, or extreme narcissistic behaviors, the tables don't turn really until they feel that you're hooked in, until they feel that you're connected enough to them, that it's only then when your kind of body and mind are kind of plugged into the person that then things switch, because, you know, I can treat you in a certain way, but you're already hooked into me. And so you're going to tolerate a lot more. If I started off with those behaviors, well, you'd probably leave pretty quick. But if your limbic system is kind of triggered by me and engaged, you know, we've got that animalistic part of us has kicked in and we're finding the person deeply attractive, we're getting maybe a status hit off the fact that this person likes to hang around with me. Like I said, they can be very charming and sometimes very, very successful. So to be around them, wow, it's quite a roller coaster ride. And if we like those adrenalized kind of hits too, then this can leave us very, very vulnerable to certain dynamics going forward. So we have to be aware that often a lot of the devaluation or the poor behavior won't start until they've got well through that idealization phase, where they've got us hooked in. But if we're already aware, what this means is if needs be, we can adapt our strategies accordingly, or we can decide that perhaps this is not somebody whom I want to kind of or feel it's appropriate or sometimes even safe to have a relationship with, and I'm going to act accordingly. It's, you know, what this does is we don't get caught so much by surprise. It's not such a shock to our system because we've already got a sense of, okay, this person could be. So I find this helps me sometimes in terms of, you know, working in areas and consulting in environments where, you know, certain professions do attract people who want validation, recognition, power, and admiration. So there's certain professions where you're likely to find a greater proportion of people with these kinds of social dysfunctional elements because they're going to be drawn to it. I deal sometimes with those environments, so I've always got a little bit of radar tracking. And it just helps me to decide, because sometimes I've been involved in narcissistic dynamics with somebody for way longer than I should have, and it it ended up costing me a lot. So, and when I learned about this sort of stuff, some of the dynamics, I looked back and I went, ah, right, that explains so much. Gee, that would have been helpful if I had known that then. I wouldn't have been scratching my head or just in trying to employ more empathy. I would have gone with different strategies. The strategies we'll talk about possibly in another episode. There's a number of ways we can go about dealing with these type of dynamics. The main one is that we cannot control how another person is going to respond and behave. We can only look at the responses that we're putting out into the world. So the number one thing that we are doing when we're confronted with very triggering people is that we are watching our own emotional reactivity. We're staying out of reactivity and staying in responsiveness. You know, I have deep compassion for people who have this kind of, you know, narcissistic wounding from childhood, or deep control issues through whatever they experienced growing up. Absolutely, I have deep compassion for it. But also, you know, compassion and understanding does not mean that we then tolerate, you know, any kinds of, you know, antisocial or abusive style behaviors. But it does allow me to have a place of clarity where I can respond a bit differently rather than just getting enraged and firing back, which generally only escalates the situation. So when I come across these type of people, the thing I watch most is what kind of responses is this, the other, is their behavior evoking in me, and what do I need to address in me as a result of what their behavior is triggering in me. So I'm not looking to change the narcissist necessarily. I'm actually looking to change my response to the narcissist, because in the end of the day, that's the only thing I can control. But we'll go over some of the ways in which that might look for us going forward. So I hope you found this episode to be thought-provoking and valuable, because we are going to come across people who, you know, from time to time, who carried some of this wounding. So it's good to have some insight and understanding of what to do. So thank you for listening to today's episode. As always, for those of you who've been following along since the beginning, my profoundest gratitude. If you're just joining us, welcome. The way you support the program is going to iTunes, download, subscribe, and leave a 5-star rating, please, as it makes it easier for others to find us. And also, the Relationship Resourcing Series on the Sean Healy YouTube channel is available. I do a lot of similar kind of material in YouTube form, so you're welcome to come across, subscribe, and follow me on that format as well. If you have access to iTunes, obviously you can find Sean Healy Tools there, or Stitcher, Podbean, and other podcast mediums. Sean Healy Tools is available. And of course, visit me at the website, emergencetraining.com.au. I work with one-to-one coaching on people dynamics in relationship and business, and I also offer public training courses around personality profiling, things like NLP, and how to kind of use language dynamics to get better results in our business and personal lives, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, please come and check us out at emergencetraining.com.au. Thank you again. Until we are with each other on the next episode, bye for now.